If you are a teacher, parent, administrator, student, and or anyone who loves reconnecting children with nature, and you want to figure out how to cultivate learning gardens and nature-based curriculum, then this is the podcast, the Outdoor Classrooms Podcast. My name is Victoria Hackett. I am the founder of OutdoorClassrooms.com and the Secret Gardens Nature Classes. I love witnessing the magic that happens when children are playfully learning outdoors. Observing the return of wonder and curiosity when children are interacting with nature is pure magic. This is the podcast that is going to help you capture children's interest and give you not only inspiration, but some real life strategies that are going to help you figure out how to use the outdoor space, your outdoor space, as a teaching tool so you can enlighten the playful learning experience for young children. Welcome to our Outdoor Classrooms community. Introducing a new online workshop. It's called Nurture Imagination in a Waldorf-inspired Outdoor Classroom. It's a one-hour workshop, which is being offered live to our Circle members on March 21st. For non-Circle members, you may listen to the recording on March 22nd. And a little bit more about that after I read the description. So the description is, do you ever wonder what Waldorf education is all about and how you could incorporate this philosophy of education into your outdoor classroom? Waldorf schools emphasize cultivating children's emotional life and imagination. Waldorf educators believe that in order for children to connect more deeply with any subject matter, all subjects are presented through artistic work that includes storytelling, visual arts, drama, movement, music, and crafts. In this workshop, we explore how these materials nurture the imagination. We will also highlight a variety of Waldorf outdoor classrooms to discover how to incorporate these methods into your outdoor classroom. So here is the deal. If you are a Circle member, this workshop is actually a part of your membership. You do not have to pay additional costs. If you would like to become a Circle member, you can purchase our membership for $27 a month, and you get access to not only this workshop live, you get to participate live, and the upcoming Exploring Nature in Spring Masterclass. That's all included for the $27 a month, or you can pay for the whole year. If you do not want to be a member, which is totally fine, you can access this workshop for $37. We will get the workshop recording. You will not have access to the Exploring Nature in Spring Masterclass. You just get access to the workshops. So this decision's yours. The information, the link will be in the show notes, and we would love to have you on March 21st. If you have any questions regarding this workshop or the upcoming masterclass, please email me at victoria@outdoor-classrooms.com, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you have. Talk to you soon. Bye. Joy has been the building block of Jody Simpson's teaching career of 22 years. She is currently teaching kindergarten and has taught preschool, first grade, and second grade. She's also the author of Circle Time Poetry Series, published by Scholastic in 2005, as well as Read, Snack, and Learn with Favorite Picture Books in 2004. Sharing her ideas and activities with other teachers helped her grow as a mentor teacher for so many other student teachers. She's also worked with a team of author collaborators for other school districts' curriculum. Her learning and teaching journey includes being the recipient of the North Fork Teacher of the Year in 2014. I have no surprise there. And the Colorado Teacher of the Year finalist in 2017. Currently, Jody Simpson is a part of the nature-based learning cohort of teachers that supports other educators in teaching students outdoors. She is also an active participant in our Circle membership community at Outdoor Classrooms. Without further ado, Jody Simpson. Hello, everybody. We have Jody Simpson here from Colorado. She is going to be sharing some of her experiences being a kindergarten teacher and using an outdoor classroom. And welcome, Jody.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I was just saying this is kind of like a dream because last summer I was listening to the podcast and picturing Victoria and like hearing all these amazing stories and thinking, oh my goodness, I want to be a part of this group of people. So it's an honor to be here and it's very exciting. So thank you.
Thank you for those kind words. So Jody is also a Circle member. So she can also talk about a little bit about what that experience is like. So let's dive in. This is just for those that are listening. This is also an outdoor classrooms tour and talk, which means that we are looking at some of her incredible pictures and we will be talking about the pictures. So if you are a Circle member, you get access to these outdoor classrooms tour and talks as part of your membership. And they're amazing. So there you really get to see behind the scenes of a variety of outdoor classrooms. And this one is especially beautiful. And Jody comes to us with some expertise and some great experience. So let's hear her story. So Jody, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and a little bit of peak before you became a nature-based educator?
Sure. I'll try not to make it too long, my growing up years, but I was born in New Jersey, upper New Jersey, which is very beautiful and rural. And we lived in a house in the woods by a lake. And I am the youngest of nine children. So it was a very busy home. There was a lot of comings and goings. And I found myself going outside a lot to find these quiet spaces. I have three brothers right above me in our birth order. And of course, they wanted to do different things than I did. So I felt a lot of nurture from the woods around me. I was never afraid. I still remember the feeling of looking up, you know, when you're lying on your back and you see the branches do their dancing and almost like intermingling and you kind of have a dizzy feeling, but you're also cold at the same time. I just have a lot of those experiences that are a part of me. And as I was growing up and we moved out to Colorado when I was almost a freshman, it was my eighth grade year. And the grandeur and the way the nature changed was really like astounding. I mean, the mountains out here are incredible, but I always missed the soft lakes where I grew up. I missed the gullies. I missed how there's canopies of trees over the road. So I would go back and visit. And after we had children, my husband and I also would take them back so they could experience some of these beautiful soft places. And we'd come back to this rugged grandeur out in Colorado. And I thought it was beautiful that they could see both sides of what nature give them. And then I was lucky enough to be home with my kids. And as I was raising them, I felt like these playful experiences start to come out again. And I would read to them and we'd sing a lot. And then it was like the stories. I never wanted the stories to end. And I would tuck them in and I would write these poems and different connections to go with stories. And that led to me becoming a library storyteller for a couple summers as a volunteer. And then I did some preschool work and I finished my education to be a teacher. And that was back in the day when you actually mailed your packets to your instructor. That was the correspondence course. And yeah, and then during all that, I just pulled out the pieces and I sent them off to Scholastic and other places to see if some of these ideas could be published. And so right about the time when I first started teaching full time, when both kids were in school, I also was able to be published. So it was really an exciting time.
Wow.
And it was my children who really helped me grow to be the teacher and the writer I am today. So they're such blessings to us.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? That's amazing. So then now you're teaching at a local public elementary school. And when you started teaching, were you into nature-based education? Did you know about nature? What got you outdoors?
So, you know, I was always just outdoors with the children, having fun anyway with my own children, but I was pretty much a traditional public school teacher where we had our recesses and we'd sometimes have picnics outside or we did raise butterflies, but I wasn't really doing direct instruction in an outdoor classroom. And I taught for probably 17, 18 years before I transitioned into more outdoor teaching. In fact, it was during COVID when we experienced coming back in a safer way by being outside more. And so it was this natural transition into spending more time outside. And I also changed grade levels. I taught first grade for many years, and then I moved up to second grade and taught there for about 4 or 5 years. And then when our kindergarten teacher retired, I said, oh, I would really love to be able to go down and protect kindergarten to be this beautiful place. And really what, you know, the father of kindergarten, Froebel, said kindergarten should be. So that really, I would say in the last 4 or 5 years has really helped me become the kind of teacher that takes kids outside more and more.
And we have been so fortunate to have you a part of the Circle community to see these updates and all that you are doing. Can you give us an overview of your outdoor space, your outdoor classroom? So this is probably in the last couple of years, no doubt has evolved.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about what that is like?
Yeah, sure. So starting out during the time when we were transitioning back into school in person, like we were mentioning earlier during the pandemic, I just basically walked down the sidewalk a little bit. We had a wheelbarrow. The church donated a wheelbarrow to me, and I put the children's books in them and some things to sit on. And I had an easel where I put the big books. And we basically just did a lot of read alouds outside, and then kids would have their little bags of books. And then we, after that year, we transitioned to a new building, in fact, which is the building we're currently in. And it's beautiful because it's by the Riverwalk and I have much mm-hmm. more space. So it started small with just bringing the books outside, but it was also happening at a time when I was learning about the theory of loose parts, the Reggio approach, and really, really honing in on letting the children lead more. So the more I was being comfortable with what I was learning, and the more I saw the power of what they were doing outside by moving all these pieces around. If you'll see behind the wagon, those are some old planks that we even had at the original building where I taught for, you know, 18 years. They would move them into different pieces, and they would become couches, or they would become walkways, and or they'd make their own balance beams. And I'd say, oh my goodness, the kids I never hear talking much during class in the room are showing me this whole other side. So then we were able to bring in more parts and more stumps and bigger spaces. And each little stepping stone really can lead all of us to growing these outdoor experiences.
I have to say that story of just seeing children that aren't necessarily thriving in the indoor classroom, and how when you put them outdoors. I have one in my parent-child nature class, and just the thriving in, I mean, all of them really, it's to see them connect and have their mm-hmm. little brains just come alive. And it's exciting. And I think it's as I talk to more educators, it's truly a theme that's throughout, you know, that they are coming alive. You are a alumni of the Good Nature Learning Program. And you were a fellow. Can you tell us a little bit about that program, what that program's all about, how that came into your world? And
mm-hmm. Oh, I'd love to tell you, because that's actually what brought me a little closer to being spending more time with the Circle membership. Last spring, it was about this time last year, there was an email out from Good Natured Learning that was connecting teachers in Western Colorado to come together. They were interested in learning more about teaching outdoors. And so you wrote what you were experiencing in your own classroom and how you were taking children outside and what you believed about children and nature and spreading, building this learning community worldwide almost. Like, what part could you be if you can start collaborating with others and building this network of learners and teachers? So I was lucky enough to become a part of this cohort, and the training with other teachers from our side of the state is put together so that people are building their own capacity at becoming stronger in what we do with our own outdoor classrooms. And then we're supported every month by meeting with our cohort online, and we're talking about what we're doing and what we're seeing as we're growing, how we're overcoming challenges. We're giving each other ideas on resources, and we're building our own case studies that we get all our data, we share photos, we discuss with each other, and we talk about how we're growing, and we give each other advice. Meanwhile, we lean on some of the training we had in the summer. For a week, we were in a cabin in this beautiful mountain area above Boulder, where 10 of us were learning together how to train our fellow teachers this spring in these different methods of being outside and being an outdoor educator. And so you're not only learning how to become a stronger teacher outside yourself, you're getting support every month with your cohort, your family of teachers. And then we're going out now and we're going to be teaching the teachers in our district. So it's a beautiful way to take what you love, to refine it a little bit in your own case studies, and then bring it to other teachers to empower them.
So have you done the training for your other teachers?
Yes. So the training we actually did in the summer. So when we were trained, we were also trained in the same methods and the same guide that we are going to present. So it was a beautiful way to learn.
Wow. Yeah.
So we built safety and community together. And then the last couple of days, we ran through what Becca Katz, our mentor teacher, taught us. And then we got with our partners and we practiced it a little bit, and we will present next month.
I can't wait to hear.
Yeah. So that'll be great. And I think it's also really the bottom line too, is really trying to get as many children in this country worldwide to be outside as much as possible and to say, you can do this. This is how we can support you to do this. This is so doable. Every child has the right to be outside in the fresh, beautiful air, no matter where they live. And you can do it with this support, and we can do it together.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Mm. So lots of just great pictures here of kids doing, they maybe self-portraits or.
That was very early in the year. And then even walking back into the building along the sidewalk, that was just another thing I learned at our training this summer. We just call them shoulder buddies, side by side, just walking and talking with your shoulder buddy into the classroom.
That's beautiful. And I love the names and everything, the connections. I get a lot of questions. I work with schools and they might be a little reluctant about taking their class outdoors and then connecting the outdoor time with the curriculum. Can you talk a little bit, especially since you are a public school, and your time outdoors and how you might be connecting what you're doing outside? Yes. And I hear you saying, you know, following the child, but is there requirements or things that you need to follow, and how do you connect that with the outdoors?
Great question, because that I do think many teachers are like, I have all this content I need to teach. I have to follow this curriculum. And being a public school teacher, I have the same expectations, and we are a high achieving school. So we have weekly PLC meetings, and we have to present the data, and we have to say how we're growing all students in all of our content areas. So I would say mostly overall, when you're thinking about what your curriculum is or what your standards are. So I start with the state standards, science standards, math standards, social studies standards. We call our ELA, our reading, writing, and communicating standards. I have been teaching a long time, over 20 years, so I do kind of know them quite well, but they're very easy to access. So when you access what your state standards are, you'll notice there's like an overarching umbrella. So if it's life science, for whatever your grade is, you pretty much know you're teaching life cycles of plants and animals. When you're looking at physical science, you're looking at physics, you're looking at forces and motion. So if you can think about, yes, I do have a lot to teach, but I'm going to get a good understanding of my state standards. I'm going to look at the overarching big idea. Then whatever curriculum pieces that your district or your school, your individual school gives you, I just literally took the math program outside every morning with the workbook pages and the manipulatives out there. But I also made sure when I scheduled math, we knew when I would have, we have a math interventionist and we have an ELA interventionist. So another thing to consider is when you know what your tools are and what your state's expectations are, if you're lucky enough to have classroom help, I would especially plan those times to have your extra helpers in your room during your outdoor time, especially the first semester, when you're building routines, when you're, you know, teaching them about safety, when they're still learning how to use the bathroom back and forth, and understanding we're going to be out here for a long time. And if you did need somebody to go back in, we also use walkie-talkies a lot. So if the office needs us, we're within 10 minutes, even if we're down on the trail. So knowing your content, but also finding as much support as you can from your staff, your support staff, and also from parents. And I have a lot of volunteers. I'm so lucky. I have retired teachers and retired nurses and accountants. And I have a classroom volunteer that comes at least once a week, that particular person for an hour or more. So that really has helped me, that I have a staff member or a volunteer.
And it seems like you spend time, like they're not just these, and I also get the big question is time, that there's just not enough time to transition, to get outside, to get back inside. And how do you manage, again, you're in a public school, how do you manage your the time outdoors and spending blocks of time?
So during the warmer months, the beginning of the year, we did a half an hour every day outside. And in that half an hour, and they're younger children, so they're, you know, what we're doing isn't a long sit time, but it takes us 5 minutes to get to the space. We have routines established where I let them just kind of experience the walk. We weren't really in a very strict line. They could talk to a neighbor along the way. They knew when we got to a particular spot, like you can say, I have a heart stump, or there's a certain sign. They know when they get close to these markers, these important places, maybe it's a rock. Maybe it's where a puddle was. Maybe where it's a tree that hangs over your fence in a certain angle. You know that that's the part where we're going to start meeting up to get ready to come in a learning circle. Mm-hmm. So then that 5 or 10 minutes of transition time, okay, yeah, let's take this time to look at the space. Let's sit down. We did a little mindfulness. Then we broke up into 2 or 3 groups with the content pieces. Then when we came back together, we came back in a circle that was about 20 minutes, 25 minutes. We transitioned back inside. So it was a very natural progression of the transition was a little looser getting out there. Mm-hmm. There's some kind of natural marker to get you ready. Okay, it's going to be more into this learning space time where we need to make a learning circle. We hold hands. And then we got into the content. And then week by week, we added more time. Mm-hmm. Then it became a little longer because I was able to have my one helper for an hour. So then we slowly just extended the time.
Started with a half an hour.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it was almost like the way you described it was like a breath in and mm-hmm. a breath out. A breath mm-hmm. in terms of what was expected. Mm-hmm. And then as the children got used to the routine, then you would add time.
Then we would add time.
Yeah. So that's, and all the different things that you're doing, it's incredible what you're managing to get in during that time. And do you feel like the children are distracted when they're out there? Mm-hmm. Are they distracted at first? Are they, but then once the routine is getting down, they're less distracted. How does that transition? There's worry about that mm-hmm. oh, we can't take them out because it's just way too distracting.
Yeah. I think it's almost the opposite. And what I think they're more engaged. They're happier. They even eat their lunches more. It's like we are so connected to nature. I think we forget that. And yes, there might be a bird that flies by or there's a flock of geese, but it is in that moment when, let's say you're learning counting by tens at that time. Sometimes what happens is when that novelty pops through and that group of geese just flew overhead, they will say, or I'll say, remember when we were counting by tens and that we all looked up and we saw those geese and we heard those geese honking? So even if there's a little distraction, it can be turned into the point of there's that memory maker of what we were doing connected to our content at that time. Mm-hmm. Another tip would be if you're starting in smaller doses, you could also take a book that you know the children love, like something like Mrs. Wishy-Washy or The Very Hungry Caterpillar, and they know you've done some choral reading. When you bring a book like that outside and you're just sitting in a circle together closer on a blanket, because they already know the story so well, it's such a natural way and they're confident and comfortable with that text that even if you're noticing they're seeing something behind you or they're looking up, you've done that story before. So you're revisiting things in this beautiful space where other things are happening around you. And I also sometimes when I'm in, this is down in Cottonwood Kingdom, you can see on the left-hand side, this is one of my classroom helpers. She's the woman I have for an hour each morning. As we were getting closer in the fall, and we're spending more times on Fridays for Forest Friday, this is our monarch study, monarch butterfly study I can talk to you more about, but come down into these spaces. And when we were all gathered in this beautiful location, I would sometimes say to the parents or to the volunteers, I said, look at the engagement in this natural space. Look how they are becoming the butterflies. Look at how they're making space for each other to come into the line. Oh, look how this person's leading this child with a parade with the American flag, because we talk about migration from the United States down to Mexico. The butterflies come up from Mexico in the spring and they go all the way up to Canada. And there's different rituals and songs we sing with it. But I would say the engagement is much more connected to the moments of curiosity, deeper learning, joy that truly comes to life when you're outside.
Yeah.
And if there is a little distraction, bringing them back together, because you have started slowly in smaller chunks of time, and they know the routines of your songs or your spaces, you can bring them back together.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. And so well spoken and articulated, because that is exactly, that's it. And I love actually how you also talked about educating the volunteers or the other parents that are there while you're teaching them. So you have your sort of teacher lens on, and that you can say, take a step back and see, telling them what they're observing as well and articulating that for them. Mm-hmm. Is really key as well. So can you tell us a little bit about some educators that are listening might be worried about taking their children or their classes out because they might have runners, or we talked a little bit about the distracted kids. What about just managing behavior and worrying about kids that might take off?
Yes. We actually, this year, we had a student move in September. His parents are very comfortable with talking about his divergencies, and he is level 3 or 4, the highest level of autism. I didn't even know there were levels of autism on the spectrum. He is nonverbal, but he has blossomed tremendously, and he actually was a runner at his old preschool, and I think they call it eloping, leaving, you know, the space. And so in that case, we do have an aide with him one-on-one. But again, in this outdoor space, because the lights aren't making those little sounds, the space isn't crunched in, the contentment and the happiness with that child really has overcome. Like, I'll sometimes step back again and I'll look and I'll say, look how engaged and how happy he is. Now, there are times, of course, you have to know where the dangers are. So there are spots where, of course, even the trail is closed. So when people are planning to go outside, for example, for me, I know where parts of the trail are closed, because last year the spring off was very high and there's parts of the trail that aren't safe. I also made sure I knew at the beginning of the year, where are the sunny spots? Where are the shady spots? Where are the spots we're going to be spending most of our time? What can I teach children about the obstacles that might be in the space that we're playing, so that where would be the places that are safe to run? Where are the places where we need to be maybe moving slowly? I would, again, go back to the point of if you know you have children who are not staying close usually, have those be the days where you have enough people with you that if you're actually even the person that's close to that person who might take off, you're trusting a parent to read the story. You're trusting a volunteer to lay out the math supplies. So you can do it that way. You can be the person who, if you feel more comfortable that way, you're more in charge of where the safety parts are for those children who might have some special needs. Okay. and trust the other people to do the reading and the singing. In the center of this circle, this is my friend Jean, and she was a kindergarten teacher, a special ed teacher, a second grade teacher. She's retired now, but she comes with us every Friday, and she was ready to spread the confetti, the seeds that we just planted, and see if they come up next year. I think it's really about knowing your space, knowing your children, growing with them. So I learned alongside my special ed team how to help support our new student who's thriving now.
And it's not a small class. I just want to point out to those that don't have the pictures in front of them, how many children are you in your class?
We have 16 students. And on Forest Fridays, now that we've built our stamina and our routines, we're down in the forest now for about a little over 2 hours on Fridays.
Wow.
And parents come, which is beautiful. So now we have a team of parents that come, about five, at least five, and they bring younger siblings. So sometimes we have five extra littles that are younger than the 5 and 6 year olds.
Again, planning, you must have to do extra planning because you're teaching outdoors, mm-hmm. setting up, connecting standards. You've talked a lot about that and developing these routines you've also talked about. But mm-hmm. do you feel like it's an added component that you have to do extra, or you've gotten to the point that it's streamlined?
I would say that the nature part has actually become more streamlined. Mm-hmm. Because you're always planning anyway. So whatever you're doing to plan for your lessons inside the classroom, I would say that's the same amount of planning, record keeping, data entry. I'm doing the same amount of that. And when Thursday night, before I know we're going to Forest Friday, I do need to be able to have the two wagons ready for what we need. But I would say there's no difference in the actual planning, except the beauty that I have learned in the last few years of following their interests and what it is that they're seeking to return to each week. And it was during January, and in kindergarten, there's this beautiful transition where they come back to you after winter break, and these connections are happening in their brains, and they're becoming more independent, and they're speaking up more, and they're planning more, and they're starting to ask for more things. So now I ask them Thursdays, what is it that you want to do tomorrow? What are we going to revisit? What did we learn this week that you want to learn deeper out in the woods? What are we going to do if the weather is not agreeable? What do we have? So now they become part of the planning. And that's been very helpful. And they're even carrying more things. So they carry their own lunches now. They carry their own. We put all of our learning supplies in a little drum. And I think I told the circle members, but we talk about capacity in our backpacks. What do we need to remove to make enough space to pack our things we need? And so the planning is there no matter what. I'm still using pretty much the same curriculum. The experiences to bring that to life look different depending on what we've done that week. You know, I tell people I'm not really, I have to do data, but I'm really not a data and graphs person. I say I'm kind of like a mood ring person where I have this feeling. So I was telling you and some other people, and I have it written down here. It's like, truly, I take the planning for the curriculum here and the state standards on one hand, and then I take my heart and the children's heart in my other hand. And what I think about is, because I love words, so I have this acronym for heart, that H stands for the human connection that we all are born with to be connected to nature. And we've gotten away from knowing that the closer we are to the earth, we become more ourselves. We're more relaxed. Our imaginations open up. We're feeling, we're touching, we're sensing all of this around us. And we have this natural connection. So humans really are connected to nature. Nature needs us and we need nature. And then the planning comes for the E in heart, for HE, for exploring and what the kids are engaged in. Because every time they're doing some action or they have some question or some curiosity, I'm taking that in and I'm giving it my attention for the A in heart, and I'm paying close attention to what it is. What is their interest showing me? And then the R, later in the word heart, I'm researching, I'm reflecting, I'm refining on how I can build that together with what I know I have in my right hand to put together with my heart. So that this time I spend just quietly driving home or taking my own walks, that research that the time I put into that, I'm usually just doing on a drive home or when I'm cooking dinner. And then the tea for the end of heart is like truly bringing that teaching together with the children side by side. So the tea is teaching together. They've showed me it's like a full circle, and that heart part of the planning is just right on top of what I know we need to do for kindergarten in the state of Colorado.
For every child. I mean, it's beautiful. Thank you for that. Thank you so much for that. So it looks like you have gone on a lot of adventures and made adventures part of your journey. Can you tell us a little bit about some of these pictures?
Sure. So these are murals. Our beautiful little town, Peonia, has this artwork. We have so many musicians and artists, and of course we have farmers and coal miners and ranchers, but the artwork in our town, these murals are places that we visit, because I try to do as much place-based learning as I can. So the monarch butterfly beautiful mural is actually one of the little girls I had last year. Her father was a co-owner, and it's at the end of the street, and we walked up and we got pizza from the pizza truck, which was also one of my students' fathers had the pizza truck. And we stopped and we walked up because the butterfly is actually for a brewery. We have a little, it's called the Christmas Brewery. So we didn't talk too much about having beer at the brewery, but it wasn't open at the time. So we're okay. And And they had raised monarch butterflies, so they were so happy about that.
Oh, wow.
And then we have this whimsical kind of fantasy painting in the middle. And this is the sidewalk that is parallel with our town hall. So after we had gone in and said hello to our people who work there, our town managers and the police station, these paintings are along the wall. And across the street, there is a mural of, you can see Samuel Wade up in the top right corner. And the mm-hmm. little boy on my lap, that's Hank. And Samuel Wade is the founder of our town, and he is Hank's great, 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 great grandfather.
Wow.
So, yeah, and in fact, Samuel Wade is the man who brought peonies with him. It was his favorite flower. He wanted to name our town after the peony flower, but he registered the town through the post office. They couldn't use the Latin spelling, so they had to drop the E from the way peony was spelled, so that's how our town got named. So we take little walks into town, and we live in a small town, and children are connected
yeah.
to all of these places. We call this the Zoo Bridge. This is down on the other side of the river, and here we are with some of our volunteers. But there's little animals that are welded into this beautiful architecture.
Oh.
And then the children study the animal. Yeah, there's a little spider in there.
That's
and
so beautiful.
Here's our town, little sign. And here we are coming back from a trip with our families to eat in the middle of town at a cute little park and playing in the leaves. Everyone is so happy.
Where do your ideas come from? Do they, again, you have your curriculum that you need to follow, but you're clearly, and I know you come and we pick up things from the Circle community, but where do your ideas come from?
Well, a lot of them are connected to books and stories. And
yeah.
I do think it's almost like a terrible habit. I finish a picture book and I'm like, oh, I could do this. We could bake this. We could have a sleepover at school and do this. I can make costumes for that. But I think it's also, I have a group of friends that teach some friends in Canada and in Virginia. And we talk a lot about some of the hands-on pieces we use. We do talk a lot about being Reggio inspired and what we're doing with loose parts.
Mm.
I'm reading, getting lots of information through book recommendations, for, you know, professional books. So I think it's a combination of having a nice group of friends that have the same passion of being with children, really knowing the value, the strength, the potential in every child. And we just talk about kids, books for kids and books for adults all the time. And
yeah.
I think that's a great way to, we did different shapes and can, you know, what's easier to build. And of course the rectangle and triangle homes were simpler to build than the round ones. And
yeah. So sometimes there's one person like yourself that might be the spearheading the outdoor learning. Is your whole school involved? Is it just you? You're going to be doing a training for your colleagues at your school. Can you tell us a little bit about maybe, is it just you? Is it the whole gang?
Well, currently right now, it is just me out there every day extending our time. And I do a lot of documentation in the hallway to share. And I do a lot of documentation with my parents. And I add pictures on our class. Our school has a little website and pictures each week. But I think that people do feel like they don't have the time. And I do.
Mm.
And we also live, it's so beautiful that 10 steps out their doors, they are outside and the trees are there and the fruit trees are blooming. And so it's not like the kids aren't getting outside, but there's no one else in the building who has an outdoor classroom to the extent that I do. The middle school teachers, because we are a pre-K-8, they do, I would say twice a month. Three times a month, I see them outside doing some learning along the trail, and they do some camping. So the eighth mm-hmm. graders do more trips, and that's another thing about the Good Natured Learning Network that we talked about earlier in the interview. They also are trying to get the word out, and I'm trying my best too, that you don't have to go on these long class trips or these big, like
right.
what we call mountain peak experiences. It's almost more powerful to do these little short trips out into your nearby nature as much
yes.
as
you can. And I think what you have described in terms of starting just very, very small, even if it wasn't the half an hour and you just went out for a story mm-hmm. and then you tried a story and an activity, and then you went inside or something. But I think it's whatever it is, it's so important to start incorporating that, those routines, and figuring out and talking to people like yourself who have done it and been through, especially since you're in a public school, because I think folk educators that are in the system, and it's that much harder. But I think if you can just shift that mindset, it seems that then you'll be on the other side of the rainbow, and just and how you describe it is eloquent. And I so appreciate that. So, and there's just so many, it seems like you have so many wonderful rituals and just things that you're doing in your outdoor classroom. We're looking at ice sculptures and beautiful bird feeders and all sorts of things. And I know you described, I think this is what you described in the circle community. Can you tell us a little bit about?
Mm-hmm. So this is fun. We wanted to reach out to the preschool. We have a preschool right across our hallway in the building, and the children decided what they wanted to make as nature gifts. So we had spent a couple of weeks before Christmas making magic wands. So we just picked up sticks in the forest. We brought in, we had been studying evergreen trees and pine cones, and I have lots of donations of, I asked families, this is another way to include families, please donate any buttons or any pieces of material or fabric or ribbons. And so we made magic wands, and I press flowers all summer. When I take my hikes, and I just, I do them by color order. So like I have a drawer for my yellow flowers and my purple flowers and leaves. And the kids use those pressed flowers that I had made in the summer to make little angels on pieces of bark that we found down in the forest. And then I saved little berry boxes, and they counted out 5 little stones that they had found. And we made little 5 frames. And we made rocks with the preschoolers' names on them so that they could get good at learning their names, learning how to count to 5. And we do a lot of storytelling, and we made little boxes with nature loose parts for them to make stories with. And it's almost like we're welcoming them into what they'll be doing in kindergarten also.
Wow. 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 It's just so rich. It's just, and I think your passion for it just makes it even better. It's exciting. And I'm hoping that so many educators will listen to this and be inspired from your seeds of inspiration. But the fact that your routines and your systems and telling your story is so important, because it really shows where you started and where you're going, and even the build up to spending 2 hours outdoors on Fridays. So it gets cold in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Michael. Last year we had a lot more snow. So it was, you know, children did come, I would say overall 95% of the children, because parents knew this was something that we were doing every day, that we were going to go out and sled at recess, and they were overall had the right gear. Other things about living in a small town is churches or other groups do ask us a couple times a year what grade levels and what sizes need particular items. So I was able to get 5 pairs of boots. People know also now that I'm doing more outdoor work, they give us their old snow clothes, their old snow pants. I get a lot of grants. So I'm able to build up some of the gear that we need through grants, donations, and groups within our town.
I get a lot of questions about bathroom.
Yeah.
Like, how do you manage? And I know I've done interviews with folks that are full-time outdoors in the forest. They don't even have a building, and they have a whole nother system. But mm-hmm. since you are in the public school and you're working with young children, how do you manage the bathroom?
No, it's so important. It's such a great question. So we always, of course, try to go before we're going out. Like, okay, we know we're going out. At the beginning of the year, when still, even in kindergarten, you have children who sometimes will have, they need more support with learning how to use the bathroom anyway, and particularly getting used to the toilet. So the bathroom thing is pretty huge the first couple months in kindergarten, typically.
Anyway, yeah.
And if you're starting, again, if you're just starting your program, and you're just 5 minutes away, and you're able to have that extra adult with you and a walkie-talkie, if that happened, and it was more in the fall, and we didn't have as many kids in October asking to go to the bathroom during that session, our math sessions, they would just go back in with the adult. Now, if I was out there alone, I would have to readjust how I thought about this. Now that we're spending 2 hours on Fridays, I have extra parents down there. And I would say only one time this since December, and we've been going every Friday, has a child say, oh, I need to go to the bathroom. And I had a couple moms there. And one mom said, okay, I will take this student and anyone else, because that's about a 10-minute walk.
Yeah.
So when we're farther, and there are things I might start thinking about if, again, I grow and I'm out there longer. Like, I think there's those little camping potties. And I think if you just put a towel and let families know that you're outside, and then I think I would have a special wagon, maybe to wagon the waste back up. I don't know. I'll have to learn about that.
Yeah, it's on one of our podcasts.
Oh, good.
I have to get the number one. No, there's a whole that she did all this research. And so I will get the number for you, but it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I will actually put it in the show notes for this podcast as well. Okay. Just to close, you've got some incredible what stories are inside these materials, and you have all sorts of loose parts. And is it the kids are taking these loose parts and they're creating their own stories?
Yes. And this is this idea, and even the little sign that says what stories live inside these materials came from the work that was being done at the Opal School in Portland. And that was closing down as COVID happened. But the book, Story Workshop, which changed, really happened at the same time all these beautiful things were happening in my life, taught me about just trusting the children to give them these beautiful materials. And I even tell them, boys and girls, the power in these materials, when you hold them and touch them, you're going to be able to create these stories. So every day, kids are building stories all over the classroom. But the story of the day, which we just do alphabetically, is the child whose story comes to a play. We do a play at the end of Story Workshop. It's about 45 minutes to an hour when we come together. And every class is different. So when I started, it was very simple stories a few years ago. And then every year they've gotten more intricate. But this class is the first class who wants to, and this is amazing for social emotional growth. They want to cooperate with a team of children. So most of the time they are getting the other children involved in their story and laying out the setting and bringing the story together as a group. And then here we are as an audience. Sometimes we're the audience. On the right, this little boy is telling his story by himself. But the other beautiful thing about building community is the log that's horizontal, that almost looks like a footstool, that part has become anything from a volcano to a cave to a tower for superheroes to a place where one girl 2 weeks ago had a memorial for one of those little My Little Ponies that had, so in the story the pony had died, but we were learning about the Lincoln Memorial and she had a little memorial on the top of the stump. So it's like, I say these same pieces, guys, you bring a meaning to them and the meaning can change.
Yeah.
Sometimes the meaning is the same. Here we have history about the Ute Indians that we were learning and the turkeys. And
they made up the story.
And they made up the story.
So you're just, and they put it all together and...
They put it together. And then I have volunteers who are writing sometimes just in a notebook what the children are doing that are not the student of the day. And then I'm writing on a story arch, story arc, however you want to pronounce that, of how the story goes. And then we all come together and watch it. So there's a time where I say to the kids, okay, I'm working with so-and-so, and remember, I'm writing down the story. So if you need to talk to another neighbor, you can share your story.
My goodness. Yeah. I want to come to Colorado and see her.
I'll be in our audience.
I mean, it's amazing. And what I love about it is that they're all, it's a mixture of natural materials and tree cookies and manufactured loose parts. And it's just gorgeous.
Yes. Those are little knobs off of one of my neighbors. She changed her cupboards and they're little knobs and they become eyes. Like they put them in like stumps that have holes and they're making wooden creatures with eyeballs, or they're mushrooms. Sometimes they're magic mushrooms. So they become different pieces. Yeah. Water slides, like pieces of bark become water slides. One year, the kids in almost every story after Christmas, there was a piece of wood that became a portal. And that was interesting because it was always a portal, but in someone else's story, where sometimes a loose part is the same actual object, but it takes on a different personality in a different story.
Oh my goodness. I love the freedom. And it really, and I think maybe you being a writer, it's tapping into this part of their brain that's like, just use your imagination. And children's imaginations are so incredibly wonderful.
It's amazing. And their sense of agency, and I'm saying they're telling people they're using their prefrontal cortex continually. They're having to plan, they're having to explain, they're having to express. So much is going on.
Oh, it's brilliant. Oh, they're so lucky to have you. Oh my goodness. So can you tell us a little bit about this beautiful? Oh,
this is so beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful things somebody has made for me. So my classroom assistant who helps with our student who moved, who is autistic, she has just sat back and she watches and she says, I have something for you. So she made this for me as a gift at Christmas, but she knows I love feathers and she knows I love the color turquoise. And she's taken the pieces that we learned up until then, because we learned about the life cycle of the butterfly and the bear and hibernation and the different trees.
Oh, wow.
And the importance of water and the mountain ute girl sitting close to the water and her little moccasins. And she just says, I hear that what you're really teaching in kindergarten are these things. Oh. And I don't know if she heard this quote somewhere else about we are here to heal and not harm and here to love and not hate. Create.
And not destroy. We are here to create and not destroy.
And so she's an artist and she put all this, she burned it with, she puts ink with it and she sands it and she varnishes it and it's right in our classroom and we all love it.
Oh, you're going to make me cry. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. It's a big piece of wood. It's probably the size, I don't know, maybe it's a foot and a half by a foot tall. Yeah.
It's stunning. It just is. It's also a testament to your work that what you're putting out, you're receiving back. It's just in a different form. And I think it's just so many lives that you're touching. And it's not only the children's lives, it's their families. And it just goes on and on and on, which is so beautiful. But then also hopefully that, you know, the other educators that are in your school, that they too will feel the magic that happened. That's what it is. It's just a magic, but it's so organic and simple of going out, but it does take a little bit of thinking. And when you're working with children in schools and all the things in the systems that we're already in, but you have so eloquently made it normal and a part of what you're already doing, which is really, really beautiful. So you are a writer. And you have worked with Scholastic. And for those that are just listening, we're looking at three different, will you tell me what we're looking at?
So these are the books that actually came about after my time being home with my children. And they were teaching me and we were learning together and experiencing book after book. And like I said, I put them down for nap time. I'd be like, oh, when they wake up, we're going to do these things or sing a little song. I have a niece that says a lot, Aunt Jody, you can stop singing now, please.
I wish we knew each other then.
Yeah, I know, because I think our children maybe are similar. Our daughter is going to be 33 and our son is going, he's 27. So they have a big space in between because I finished school after our daughter was born. But anyway, the Read, Snack, and Learn book is, because I'm also a foodie. I love food and I love books. So, I called it Story and a Snack. But of course, when you work with a publisher, they have their ways of thinking that it's going to be marketed differently. But that's really fun. And a lot of my favorite books are older books. So Eric Carle books, Leo Leone books, Tommy DiPaola books. Oh, Tommy DiPaola is my hero. I love him. Such a special place in my heart for him. So those are just no cook recipes that you can do after you share a book with children. And there's also some learning activities that go with them. And then the other books, the Circle Time Poetry books, the math around the year, which would be different seasons and every month, and science are all connected to a poem that you share. You do a poem together with children on a large, you're doing a shared reading or interactive reading and writing activity with them. And then there's usually a craft, some ELA standards. I did have to tie them into the NAICS standards. And then I'm hoping to do some more. I sent out some ideas that are more like Circle Time Poetry goes in the woods, goes outside, outdoor learning. So we'll see if those come to print, but I can still do the ideas anyway. So those were just some fun things with my own children.
That is just amazing. Is there anything else that we have not covered that you would like to share with our community?
I just want everyone to say to themselves, if they're thinking about it, see if you can find a like-minded person in your building or somewhere in your school district and try something really small, taking a book that you know your kids love, that you love, and just going out to where the recess space is. And maybe, of course, it'd be, you wouldn't want it when other kids were out there at recess. And just try, now that spring is coming, just start really slow and start with a book, start with a story. Give yourself some time to let the kids explore and then really just be a kid watcher for maybe 5 minutes. Just, I know that you can do it. And then see what it is that they're engaging with. Mm-hmm. Another tip is you could set out a bird feeder outside your window. That is also very doable. Birds are coming and going all year long. Know a couple of, like, two or three birds that are in your area. Know them really well. Go online. Find, I use the Merlin app, which is fantastic. It's free. It's from Cornell. And you can just, you're walking along, you turn it on, it picks it up, it tells you what the species is. You can even go back and re-listen to the sound. You can look it up and find out more information about it. If you're a book lover, which I think many primary teachers, the read aloud time, I'm sure, is like one of the dearest, most precious parts of your day. Think about, is there something I can do at the end of this week that's a little bit we can do outside with this book? You know, even if it's just having a little cup of cocoa or some tea outside with a book that you love, it starts like that. You can ask parents, could somebody make, I don't have any allergies, but in my class for the last couple of years, but somebody made peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and we just took our snacks out. Snack time was with our books. I think find people who you know would want to try this with you. Listen and read a lot of books about it. Listen to your heart. Listen to what it is you love to do with your kids, because that's your strength. Find what it is they like, what you know they're crazy about, what they're asking you about, and just try a 10 or 15 minute time and build from there.
Beautiful. Such wonderful tips. Tell us a little bit about your what it's like to be a Circle member. And then let people know where they can find you.
Okay. So right there, that's like your family of people. Now your connection. So if you're thinking about it and you want a group of people who are passionate about getting kids outside, please join. The Circle has given me, like, I feel like I have new friends. We're sharing ideas. We're comfortable. We're inspiring each other to read other books about nature. We learn from each other every week. It's so comfortable to ask, oh, how did you do that? Tell me more about that. Oh, can I take a screenshot of what you just explained? It's like the learning, the word circle is perfect because you're continually learning and giving. You're feeling safe in the circle space. You're feeling connected. And you can also go into it as deeply as you would like, or you can just pop on when it works for you. And I feel like the subscription is so minimal for what it provides, because I think it's $27 a month. So you're meeting a couple times a month if you're taking the classes too. The classes are part of your membership. So you're learning, you have access to the class and the videos and the resources for as long as you want them. And you're talking every week to people and you're sharing pictures. So you're growing, you're sharing, you're learning. Now I'm using that more as my professional development, and I'm getting books instead of buying books, professional books, I'm getting them through interlibrary loan at my library. And I'm getting more connections with people. So I just, the more you connect in the membership, you're also then listening to the podcast, then the podcast is connecting you to other podcasts, and you're all kind of coalescing around really believing in the capabilities and the strength of each child and the potential and what they can do outside.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
So where can we find you if someone wanted to find you?
So when I started to get on Instagram, because again, it was like during COVID, like, I don't know what that is. And somebody said, oh, well, just kind of get on and look at some things. So, oh, wow, look at all these things. So then I wasn't very creative in coming up with my name. But so if you look for me on Instagram, it's just very simple. It's looking at photos. It's looking not at dot photos.
There you go.
And I don't have any fancy handle. I don't do any hashtag things. And then it's okay through my school district that you contact me, especially because I'm part of the Good Natured Learning.
Thank you so much, Jody. This has been absolutely amazing. I am walking away just completely inspired by your story and touched by your passion for this work. And can't thank you enough for everything that you are doing, not only for the children in your community, the parents, the families, the fellow educators in your school, but even in our circle community, you bring so much to that group as well. So I feel so blessed that our paths have crossed and want to thank you for your time.
I feel the same way. Thank you so much. Thank you for what you're doing, because you're doing it at such a grander scale, but it also feels really like a natural connection with you. You have such a warm way of bringing people together, and it's just my pleasure, and I'm so lucky that this is what I get to do. So thank you for asking great questions, and I hope more people connect and get those kids outside. You'll be so happy that you do. Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us here at the Outdoor Classrooms podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with anybody who you think would enjoy it and follow us on Instagram. We'd love to continue the conversation. If you want to continue the conversation even deeper, please join us in the Circle community. The purpose of the Circle is to support, guide, and push you as you continually grow and sustain your outdoor classroom by providing the tools to help you set the right goals, then actually follow through in achieving those goals with the support of our amazing community. Each month, 24/7, you get guidance and support from myself. You get to begin your journey with our new member roadmap. You get access to our outdoor teaching bootcamp. You get to interact and learn from guest experts who are on our podcast. They come into our membership and join us to continue the conversation. You get to connect and collaborate during 2 live sessions a month. You get access to all our online workshops and masterclasses. You get to dig deeper with our membership missions each month, and you get to become an ambassador of joy for children. I hope you can join us. You get all of this. You get to become a member of our family at Outdoor Classroom. So I hope you can join us. I will share the link in the show notes, and we'll see you later. Come join us.